Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast Extra in association with Get Reading for Friday, April 22nd, 2016. Thanks very much for joining us on the show this week and hitting that download button. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilehurstend.com, and I'm joined, as always, on the podcast extra by Get Reading's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, hello, how are you?
Dan, I'm very good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad. Thanks, mate. Not so bad. The end is in sight. And I don't think I'm the only Reading fan, and I don't think you'll be the only Reading reporter who is very much looking forward to this summer.
Hallelujah. It's been a bit of a grind, hasn't it? It's the second half of the season. It's not been much fun.
No, not at all. I think we're all looking forward to getting on that beach, even if we're not actually going to a beach. Just the very fact that we don't have to turn to the Medeski Stadium on a Saturday is a welcome relief, because, like I say, it's just been a chore. It really has been, especially the last few weeks. I don't know how you do this for an actual living.
Yeah, it's not, well, actually, I can't complain too much about it. It's a good job. I love my job, but yeah, it'd be nice to see to have seen a few more wins since the turn of the year, but that hasn't happened. But like you said, summer's here. We can recharge our batteries, and you know full well there'll be doom and gloom at the moment, but we'll all come back in the summer feeling good and, you know, hoping for a good 2016-17.
Yeah, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in that August sunshine where we're exactly. All expecting great things out of players that have previously shown nothing. But that optimism reigns, ready to be crushed anew. But anyway, we've got lots to talk about on today's show. We've got some rumours of transfers in and out, some summer plans, a possible European tour destination for the pre-season as well. Before we get to all of that, we've unfortunately got another couple of defeats to talk over. Charles, 3-2 defeat at Leeds for a 2-1 home reverse against Hull. Did Reading deserve to come away from this with 0 points?
No, I don't think they did at all, but I think that sums up everything that's wrong at the moment about the team, about the club, is that they don't know how to win games. They've kind of forgotten how to win games, because it absolutely, you go back, add Middlesbrough into that as well, there's no way Reading should be sitting there with nothing from those three games. You know, they could easily have had 9 points out of nine from them. They played well enough to. They had the chances to, but they didn't take them. They fluffed their lines when needed and gave away stupid goals and missed great opportunities at the other end. So, and it just sums up what's wrong with this place at the moment. Is, and Brian McDermott touched on it yesterday when I was speaking to him. He knows well that he's got to somehow get back into this team about how they actually win a football match, because when matches are there for the taking, and Reading just don't seem to be able to sort of grasp it and take the opportunities in the key moments, and they keep ending up losing. And you know, there's no way they should have lost the game. I mean, Leeds were rubbish; they were nothing up there, and yet they scored three goals with pretty much. I think there was one shot in the first half which sort of went through Al Habsi and was kind of hit the post, cleared off the line. But other than that, yeah, Habsi had absolutely nothing to do apart from pick the ball out of his net on three occasions. You know, and those such simple goals, you know, two crosses that were not cut out, three headers, and then, you know, we all saw the third goal was a calamity. And yet Reading pretty much controlled the game for 90 minutes, created loads of chances, but only stuck two away. So, yeah, just summed up, like I said, everything that's kind of wrong about this place at the moment.
Yeah, and then they get the lead against Hull as well. Jake Cooper with a good header. Ollie Norwood with a good set piece. It's so frustrating because we've seen how he can do those set pieces, but they're far too infrequent. But anyway, lands one on the head of Jake Cooper, gives us a lead. And again, you're thinking, great, this is the night where we turn it on. And once again, it all just falls flat. They concede a softish equaliser. Al Habsi will probably be looking at himself, wishing he'd done better. And then the sucker punch in the second half as well. Again, to quote one Tim Deller, same old story.
Yeah, and there were two really easy goals. It's not like hard to work for those, was it? It was just one long ball over the top for the first goal, and then the second goal. I mean, it was a great finish from Robertson, but he was given 30 or 40 yards to run into without anyone challenging him whatsoever. And he drilled it into the bottom corner. Just two really, really avoidable goals and simple goals that Reading should not have been conceding. And yet they did. And like I said, they got themselves in front and couldn't hold on. And, you know, they played well enough. I think the big talking point was the penalty, straight non-penalty. I actually think the referee got it right in the end. I don't think it was a penalty, even though I've seen a lot of people watching the video and saying that it was.
I'm on your side. I thought he got touch of the ball before he got rackles, but yeah, that's only from one angle.
It was a really tough one. You know, there was. I certainly wouldn't say, like some people saying, it was clear cut. I don't think it was. And I thought at the time I was really surprised when I saw the referee point to the spot, because I saw as well that he was looking at his linesman, and to me the linesman was pointing to the corner, and yeah, he gave the penalty. But then both managers explained afterwards that apparently there's some new crazy law coming where now when linesmen signal for penalties, they don't put the flag across the chest like they used to. The new signal is to run quickly to the point of, to the corner flag and point at the flag.
Which how just, very bizarre.
Just seems the most bizarre thing you've ever heard, because it just looks like they're pointing for a corner. And it just can lead to these sort of confusion. And so, yeah, I think the referee never actually gave a penalty. He thought the lino was pointing for a penalty, but he wasn't. Lino was just signaling for a corner. And, so I think all of that could have been avoided. But yeah, I mean, that was... See, if that was given and Rennie could have scored that, they would have probably gone and won the game. But instead, they, as usual, ended empty-handed.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier about the fact that we're just conceding from not a lot of shots and we're having lots of shots and not scoring from them. I mean, the stats actually bear that out. There was the latest infographic, I think it was from the Experimental 361. I apologise if it wasn't. But again, it highlights the fact that Reading are amongst the very best in the Championship at shots per game and at conceding the fewest shots per game. They're right up there with any team in the Championship. The problem is, unfortunately, that the wrong ends... both in terms of shot conversion and the amount of shots they're allowed to be converted. So it's not a case of a quantity issue. You know, they're not such a shambles that they're letting teams run riot, or, you know, they're so weak that they're not creating these chances. They are. They're just not converting them, or in the case of chances as well, I think, unfortunately, large percentage of those are Danny Williams shots high and wide. But we'll have to delve more into that into the summer. But so they come away empty-handed. It's now four defeats in a row. And obviously attention is turning towards, well, people are venting their frustrations left, right and centre. And we've seen a full spectrum of it on the Tylehurst end. And I've noticed several opinion pieces up on Get Reading as well. Some people blaming Vidra in the attack. Other people are blaming the defence. And a lot of people now are unfortunately, well, from my point of view, unfortunately, pinning the blame on Brian McDermott. Do you think he's culpable in any way towards this slump?
Well, I think he's got to be culpable just because he's the manager, but I think it's very, very unfair to put the blame for this squarely on Brian's head. I mean, the problems have started long before he arrived, and unfortunately he hasn't been able to turn things around since he got here. And I think even he yesterday said to me that he would have hoped he would have won more matches having come in December. But I think it's very harsh to blame Brian. I mean, the problems at Reading stem far beyond Brian. They've been going on long before he got here. And I still think, and I've had loads of grief for saying this, but I still think he's a man who can turn things around. I think it's just such a huge rebuild to do in the summer. The squad's rotten now. I mean, it's just gone, just like this last couple of weeks have proved it. There's no way they should have been ended empty-handed. And there's no way that I can point to any of the blame really to be at Brian McDermott for the fact that Renton have not picked up any points in the last few weeks. The blame squarely for me falls on the players. Rank bad defending at times, bad finishing at times, and not being able to get something over the line. I mean, they've taken the lead at Leeds. They're 1-0 up at half-time at Leeds. They're 1-0 up against Hull City. When you go 1-0 up in the Championship, you've got to hold on to those leads. You can't front away. And Renton's done that. And for me, I know a lot of people just immediately point the blame at the manager, but I don't think it's Brian McDermott's fault. And I really do think he can turn things around this summer if and it's a big if, that he's given the tools to do it. But it's just a huge rebuilding job ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. Again, you can go onto the tylehurstend.com and read my article about why I don't think it's right to be pinning all the blame on Brian McDermott. You speak to him. We obviously, as the listening public, heard a high profile, I wouldn't say meltdown, but his frustrations really showing through against Middlesbrough. How do you think he feels under pressure at the moment? You've had a chance to speak to him a couple of times since then during this run.
I think he feels under pressure. I mean, I asked him flat out on Tuesday night after the defeat. I sat in a press conference and asked him, do you fear the sack, Brian? And he said no. He said he doesn't fear the sack. He can't fear the sack because that's beyond his control. And, you know, he's an experienced manager. He's been sacked before. And I'm sure he'll be sacked again. It's just what happens to managers. But, you know, he doesn't fear it. He's old enough in the game now to just get on with it and see what happens. You can't worry about things beyond your control. But, you know, he's not stupid. He knows full well that it's a cliche if it's a results business, but it is. And, you know, the Ties have been here 2 years. They've sacked two managers already, so they've got form. They don't hang about if they want to get... If they think it's time for a change, they've shown that they pull the trigger. So he'll know full well that he needs results. And four defeats in a row, the lowest crowd in 12 years, things like that are not going to help him, especially when one of the owners is sitting in the front row of the director's box for that very game. So it's not going to help him.
Being totally honest here, what would you say his percentage chance is of getting the sack this summer? Do you think there's any realistic chance at all?
Well, yeah, of course there is. I mean, I don't know what the Tigers are thinking. I haven't had a chance to speak to him. And you know, I asked the question on Tuesday night, knowing that Tiger was there, if I'd be able to speak to him, and was told no. Not so much a no, like someone was acting like Redden had refused permission when I put that on Twitter the other day, but it wasn't, it's not that. It's, you know, they said, look, he's here for a couple of days on his own without the other guys. Well, they will want to do something, but they'll do it probably at the end of the season when they're all here on one of their trips or something like that. So I'm sure we will get the chance to sit down and speak with the Tigers, but you know, I haven't done that recently, so I don't know exactly what they're thinking. But I would be surprised. Look, they brought Brian in December. I mean, is it really fair to get rid of him before he's had any summer, before he's been able to bring any of his own players with him? I mean, they brought him in December and sold the club's top goal scorer a few days later. The guy who pretty much single-handedly had been getting all the points in the first half of the season. So what's Brian supposed to do? You know, it's a really difficult job for him. And there's a massive rebuild on the cards now. And I, you know, there's at least 10 players probably going to be heading out the door this summer, and a hell of a lot coming in. And you know, for me, I think they should stick with Brian. They should see what he can do next season, give him the summer to rebuild, get his own players in. Try and instill this sort of passion back, this fight back in the squad, which is what they desperately need, and it's what he had before. And so, you know, I think he's a man to do it.
Yeah, I failed to believe that the Thai owners were even talked into appointing him on the basis of this is the guy that's going to turn it around this season. Because I think if you'd wanted that instant impact, you would have gone for a bit more of a shouty manager, your Neil Warnock types that, as we've seen with him at Rotherham, you know, can go into a club and get that short term turnaround. Brian's never done that. He's not got that reputation. So I wouldn't have liked to have thought they would have appointed him on the basis of purely what he does this season. But if they do lose those final three games of the season, we go into a close season on the back of seven straight defeats, which is feasible. Unfortunately, which way we look at it, you know, they've not got any easy games between now and the end of the season. It's going to be tight. And unfortunately, even if he does, and I think he will survive this summer, they do go into the summer on the back of, say, you know, even if it's six defeats in seven, it does tighten his leash for next season as well.
It does, but I think what Clark went into the end of last season, I think he lost seven of the last nine, something like that, didn't he? And he got the win on the last day of the season, obviously. They sort of went into the summer in a little bit of a high. So, and they didn't do anything in the summer, and Reading, you know, had a decent enough start to the season, the following season. So, you know, I don't think it's a be an end all, but the issue Brian has, I think there was such a sort of divide when he came in, and you know, I don't know how much the owners listened to fans and Monterey fans and stuff, but you know, there was a big divide in supporters in terms of should Brian come back. And with some of them, he was already, you know, they were firmly in that no, he shouldn't have come back at the start, and so he's already got those people who don't believe he should have been here in the first place unhappy, and the results are just making it even more and more unhappy. And you know, the voices are growing louder and more angry on sort of social media and volumes like that. So I don't know how much the Tigers listen to them and monitor it all, but you know, Brian's in that regard, he was already kind of on the back foot,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and the fact that he hasn't immediately turned things around has not made it easy for him, and it hasn't changed those people's opinions. So yeah, it's been tough for him.
Yeah, and I agree. And you can go and listen to more of my thoughts along with Dave Harris and Steve as well on the main edition on Monday. We are pretty much exactly those thoughts mirroring your own, Charles. So good to see you're amongst us in that regard. But you mentioned Tiger was over one of the three Reading co-owners. Did he give any, you know, Brian had apparently spoken to him. Talking of transfer plans, did you get any idea of how much money there is to spend this summer?
No, and I asked Brian that question. I said to him, you know, have you got assurances you are going to be given the funds that that they are going to dip their hands into their own pockets? And he said that, look, we didn't speak about anything like that. We just had a frank conversation about football. But I cannot imagine for a second that he did not ask that question himself, because he would be mad not to. But you know, he didn't go into details exactly what he spoke about. Each time we tried to push further and further on what he said, he just came back with the same answer of they were good, encouraging talks and stuff like that, and even was laughing about it. So it was clear he wasn't going to go into any sort of detail about what was discussed. But you know, of course, he must have asked that question. It'd have been crazy for him not to. It was the first time he's really sat down, I think, with one of the owners over here. So he would have wanted to know exactly what the plans were in summer. The issue is, obviously, we all know what happened last year. You know, it took Steve Clark a long time, to really being given the go-ahead last summer to spend. The Tigers are not exactly known for making swift decisions on those sort of things. And there's such a massive job ahead for Brian that I think he really needs the green light early doors this summer to get cracking, because he's got a whole huge amount of business to do. He's got to sort out the out-of-contract players, although I'm pretty sure that's already sorted out. I'm sure he knows full well they're heading off. He knows all the loan players are going, so he needs to know exactly what sort of money he's going to be given or what players are going to be sold and what funds he's going to get brought in to be able to play with.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how Robson Kanu and both of our opinions that he'll be off this summer. What about Anton Ferdinand? Because he has just come back into the side a little bit, obviously due to Paul McShane's suspension primarily. But do you see any chance of a new deal for Anton?
I think he should get one because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Jake Cooper this summer. Yeah, that, if, in my mind, there's every chance that he might well be sold a la Michael Hector last summer. And if he is, then suddenly you're looking at Paul McShane and if Anton Ferdinand wasn't given a new deal, suddenly you're looking at Paul McShane pretty much as... Well, the only centre-back.
Yeah, Pierce Sweeney and a few other exactly. players.
So I would certainly give Ferdinand an go. I thought Ferdinand was good in midweek against Hull as well. And you know, I thought he's a good player. He's good to have around. And I suppose it all depends on what wages he wants and everything. And if he's not after something astronomical, then I would certainly give him a new deal. I think he's done enough this season to warrant one.
Yeah, you mentioned Jake Cooper and the prospect that he might be off. That all comes from the presence of one Eddie Howe at several Reading games this year. He's been photographed in the director's box numerous times. Who do you think he's looking at? Is Jake Cooper one of those players?
He is one of those players. He's one of a quartet that I believe he's looking at. He's also looking at Jordan DeBeater, Oliver Norwood, and Chelsea's Michael Hector.
Mm.
So, well, yeah, it's not just... I'm pretty sure as well. I'm not sure... Yeah, I think Steve Cotterill, who I've also seen and I know has been around the Madstad recently, may well also be doing a bit of scouting for Bournemouth, and he's been there when Eddie hasn't. So they're certainly keeping a very close eye on what's going on at the moment at Reading.
Yeah, Oliver Norwood, rumours of a £3 million move. Would that represent value for money if that bid came in? Would you take it?
I wouldn't, no. But I he's got 1 year left in his contract. Is he going to sign? I don't know. So, you know, 3 million, you think that would Reading accept it? They probably would, to be honest, but I wouldn't. You know, I think there's a rejig needed at Reading this summer, and there's some players who probably could go and need to go. Maybe it all got a bit stale, but Ollie's one of the... I'd be keeping Ollie if it was down to me. Obviously, it's not. But, you know, I think he's a very good player. I think he's a young player. I think he's going to get better. And, If a central midfield was going to go this summer, I'd say it probably should be Danny Williams, who, again, I think is a good player, but he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's certainly not going to sign a new deal. He's on big money anyway. And if one of the two centre mids was going to go this summer, you think it'd probably be a better deal for Reading if Danny moved on now and tried to get his Premier League move or a move to a European club to try and cement his place in Jurgen Klinsmann's team. But I would want to keep Ollie, but obviously it's beyond a lot of people's control, isn't it? If a Premier League club comes in for him after a decent Euros, if Eddie Howe really steps up his pursuit, then you'd think, well, we know Reading sell, don't they? So
yeah, and it'll be out of their hands anyway. There's no way you can realistically turn down that sort of money, especially a year
and
before those parachute payments.
Exactly, and he'll want to go, won't he? If Eddie Howe comes knocking, and he'll want to move and go to the Premier League. So it's be very hard, but me in dreamland, I'd love Reading to turn around and slam the phone down on them and say no deal.
Yeah, I'd love Reading to find a system that suits Ollie Norwood, but unfortunately I think with the climate they've got, and we've had this discussion on social media, that I think it's too... Reading almost have to build a team around Oliver Norwood to get the best out of him. He's been playing in several different formations, and there's very few that he's really seemed to thrive in. So I'd kind of be worried that Reading would be building a team around a guy, or a midfield around a guy that's only guaranteed there for a year. I suppose if he signs a new deal in the summer, it's a different equation. And when we ran a poll on Twitter, and over 70% of people said that they would offer him a new deal this summer. So there's clearly a lot of support from the fans out there. But like you say, unfortunately, we're down the food chain now. And if a big club comes in, or even a club the size of Bournemouth, who aren't that much bigger, there's just no chance they'll hang on. So we'll have to see how that one goes. As for the others, I mean, Jake Cooper, we saw what happened to Michael Hector last summer. But as well, the thing with Jake Cooper is, and a lot of people are starting to say this, is a lot of people aren't convinced of his true ceiling. How good do you see Jake Cooper being? Do you think he is that top sort of 10 Premier League player? Is he a lower Premier League player? Or is he just going to be a sort of Alex Pearce type?
Oh no, I think he's far more than Alex Pearce. I think Jake Hooper's an excellent player. He's making a few mistakes as the season goes on, but this is his first season in the first team, isn't it? I mean, he's a young lad. He's going to make mistakes soon. Look at John Stones at a higher level now. You know, this guy, Barcelona, Chelsea won, and yet he's making mistakes week in, week out just because it's where he is at his stage of his career. He's a young centre back. Jeez, I remember when Tony Adams making shed loads of mistakes and stuff, and it's just what they do when they're youngsters. It's how they learn the game. But yeah, I think Jake Hooper. Now I've seen. I mean, his performance against Everton was imperious earlier this season in the
Yeah,
Capital Cup,
agreed.
and I think he's got all the talents to be a very, very strong Premier League defender. And he's only going to improve. Yes, he's making a few errors at the moment, but that's just, like I said, that's just what happens. And I think it's coming to the end of his first full season. He's going to be tired. He's probably going to be a bit fatigued, maybe for well. He knows that, where he will know that there are clubs looking at him. He'll know that Eddie Howe's up in a director's box before a game. He'll know that he's here again watching him. And does that make him nervy? Maybe so. So, yes, he's making errors, but I think Jake Cooper's an extremely talented defender.
And the other one you mentioned there, other than Hector, is Jordan Ibiza. Now, that would be someone that if I was watching this season, I can't say I'll be coming back with massively glowing reports, but am I being a little bit too harsh on him?
No, I wouldn't say you are being harsh. I don't think Jordan's really kicked on from his breakthrough year when he got player of the season, as he sort of struggled a little bit. But I do think he's beginning to find a little bit, he's sort of getting back to that. I thought the second half of this season, he's improved. He's settled back into. He had the competition with Andrew Taylor, didn't he? Which he was sort of in and out of the side, and maybe he struggled a little bit knowing he had that competition. But I thought since Brian's come in, since the turn of the year, that he's got back to. He started to show signs of getting back towards his best. And again with Jordan, I think he's a talented player. I think he's got a lot in the locker. I think he's a good real athlete at left back. He can get forward. He's got an awful lot to work on. You know, he's got to sort out he's got to improve his delivery, his final ball. He's got maybe score a few more goals, because I think that's almost what fullbacks need to do now. But I can see why there'd be other clubs sort of looking at him. He's got all the attributes again to be a good defender.
He's a bit of a buy low candidate for me. I think if I was a top sort of club, especially with the amount of money that's sloshing around the Premier League now, he's one of those players that's a bit of a gamble. You know, you sign him because right now he's going to attract what, maybe 2 million conservatively, and he could develop and turn into a Ryan Bertrand, or he might not. But you're not going to lose a lot of money on him, even if he flops. Like his floor isn't that much lower than what it is now. I don't think there's going to be any worse.
No.
And even as he is now, I think, you know, a lot of championship sides would play a fair whack for him.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. Like I said, I think he's got the attributes to be a decent defender. It's whether they can work on him and really turn him, make him take that step up where he goes from being a 1.5 million, £2 million defender to suddenly, like you said, being a Ryan Bertrand, £6-7 million fullback. But he's got plenty of years in the locker. He's got talent. We've seen it, and he's one hell of a sort of athlete. Like I said, he's bomb up and down the pitch all day long. So there's certainly things on there to work on. So it doesn't surprise me that there are a few people looking at him.
Yeah, he's got to hopefully make that step that the current crop of academy graduates or the ones that are sort of making their way through now haven't really done. The McCarthys, the Pearce, the Carachans, the Robson Kanus this world, who didn't quite hit that Premier League potential. But, you know, fingers crossed he does it. It's always nice to see academy products do well. And again, it sounds like Reading could be doing fairly well out of Bournemouth this summer. So the only caveat there is if they reinvest, which is
Yes, exactly.
always
And you
problem.
know, I'm not for the saying that Bournemouth are going to come in and certainly sign all four players, including, well, Michael Hector is obviously a Chelsea player. I'm not saying that that's happened, but
Will they
they're
not get a
certain.
discount if they buy in bulk?
Well, you never know. Well, I certainly have Fed's part backing and part of that deal. I tell you what, I'd be banging their door down saying, all right, well, you give me that goalkeeper back, and I would definitely want him back as any part of any deal. And I do think that he's going to the Brian will get a will change the goalkeeping situation this summer, despite the fact that I think Al Habsyi has had a good second half of the season.
Yeah, he was linked to some paper talk as well, linking him with Alex McCarthy. Any
Yeah,
legs to that, do you think?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me. It's a player that he knows well, isn't it? And I think that'll be something that he's really looking at this summer, the whole goalkeeping situation at the club. I think we could see quite a bit of change there. And like I said, no matter how well perhaps he's done, but if Bournemouth are serious and they are sort of flashing some cash about and asking what Reading want to get a couple of players, perhaps. And if I was Brian or Nicky Hammond, I'd be inquiring about what a certain Australian was doing kicking around on a substitutes bench.
Can't say I'd object to that either. And one thing we can count on from Mr. Hammond is getting a lot of value out of players. So one Mr. Blackman will certainly attest to that. That's a nice $3.5 million they've pocketed from a player who still hasn't scored since joining, since going up to the iPro.
Indeed, but I'm sure he'd have scored a fair few if he was still
here.
Oh,
here we go. Here we go.
honestly, look at these games recently where they've had loads of possession, missed chances and lost. How many of those would they lost if Blackman's up front? Not many.
He'd only scored, he'd only scored about 2 in 10 before that. But anyway, we'll not get into this. We'll save this for a proper pub chat when we're down the pub the next time. But yes, right. In the meantime, as I said, we do have a few games left to tidy up this season, starting with that Hoop Derby at Loftus Road against QPR, and a couple of good bits of news on the injury front, at least, anyway, for Brian McDermott.
Yes, well, Chris Gunner's certainly going to be back. I mean, Harold Robson-Carney's back training, but I don't think he'll be involved. I think it'll probably wait till next weekend for him. Jordan Abita's still out, and obviously the two suspended lads are out, but we'll certainly see Chris Gunner back, which will be a bit of a boost. Although, saying that, Gareth McCleary has done very, very well in that right-back role since he dropped back. I thought he was excellent at Leeds, and I thought he was excellent again in midweek, certainly in the second half. I thought he really came to the fore in the second half. And although the goal did come down his side, and maybe he should have got out and closed the guy down a little bit sooner, he got the winner. But, done well, hasn't he? Redding's Cafu, almost, or Cafu, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, the only problem is obviously you didn't want to give Chris Gunter a new 2-year deal and Gareth McCleary a 3-year deal for him to be a right-back.
No.
I think But then again, Graham Mertie was a converted winger and turned out into a championship-winning captain. So who knows what the future may hold for Gareth, especially if Chris is signed up this summer after an impressive Euros. We'll wait and see. Any particular thoughts ahead of this game? It's two teams really going through the motions. QPR not really kicked on since Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink took over. A little bit, not so much pressure, but he's not exactly got himself off to a brilliant start.
No, he hasn't. No. I don't think many people be too bothered about that down here. It's always nice to see QPR struggling. No. Like you said, it's going to be a bit, again, it's just one of those games, isn't it? It's another one to tick off before the end of the season. I don't know why. I've got a sneaky feeling for Redden in this one. I think Jan Kermigan's going to score, and I think Redden are going to win.
Yeah, I'm tipping Connor Washington to score because I think he's still without a goal.
He is without a goal, yes. Yeah. That would not surprise me, actually.
Given the run of former Reading
targets. Is he starting games? I haven't actually looked.
He's been on the bench. He's been on the bench recently, yeah. But yeah, a signing that Reading were very highly linked with for a couple of £1 million.
Oh, Brian wanted him, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and it's just impossible. It's impossible to say if they dodged a bullet. But at the moment, Dennis Rackles, who they signed instead, has scored 2 more goals than Connor Washington. So for the time being, not bad.
No, not bad at all. I like that. No, I think Dennis has done very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought he's... You know, they're working hard on him for next season. I think at the moment there's a lot of work going on the training ground with him and Jan. And I thought, again, when Jan came on Tuesday night, obviously the penalty incident came from that. Sort of the ball fed into Jan. Dennis spun off his man behind and Jan did a lovely little flick over the top for him to run onto. And just little signs there is a little bit of a possible partnership there, which is promising.
Yeah, and they're different types of players and they bring different things. That's what you need from a squad. You need different players for different situations. And for too long, Reading have been so one-dimensional up front. And it's nice to have those little different options available to either start or come off the bench. I'm quite happy with Dennis's signing so far. He's certainly not been a flop in the Dave Mooney, Carl Shepherd, Brett Williams category. He's certainly got something to offer. So yeah, good one from whoever did actually sign him. I know it wasn't directly Brian, so whoever did that deserves a little bit of a pat on the back, albeit a cautious one.
Yep.
So trip to Loftus Road. The only thing that really matters from now, because Reading's season is over, figuratively, is the Tylehurst End Prediction League. Now, it's moved and shaked in the last couple of weeks. You're off the top, Charles.
I know.
Much like your beloved Arsenal.
I know. It's mirroring Arsenal season.
Yeah. Was yours one of the empty seats
It wasn't. I didn't go, but I gave my ticket to someone else because I was doing doting husband and father duty at home. So
That was your excuse, was it?
It was, but I did give my seat to my friend who went up there with my dad. So my seat was not empty.
Oh, nice. Voting with their feet there, but a healthy 59,000 crowd nonetheless.
59, yes, 59 seats sold.
Indeed. Well, you are a point behind Johnny Williams at the top. He's on 32, you're on 31. I picked up another 3 points to move myself away from the drop zone. I'm on 24, but short of getting 3 correct scores in a row, my title is going to slip. So in the meantime, I've gone for a 2-1 win to Reading. And Dave went for a 1-1 draw. No prediction from Johnny yet. So you've got first. You've got first go at this. So how do you see it going?
I'm going to copy you, I think. I'm no threat now, so. I think I fancy a 2-1 win with a Jan Kermigan winner. Do I get extra points if Jan Kermigan scores a winner and I predict that as well?
I may use that as a tiebreak.
And then he does a baby cradle sign.
Okay, double tiebreaker. Excellent, okay.
I'm going to go 2-1 Reading. 2-1 Reading.
Remind me of this conversation should we get to a playoff.
I won't.
Excellent. Okay, well, that has just about wraps up the show this week. Oh, except for... one other little bit of news for next summer. Charles, are you looking forward to going to Slovenia?
Yes, I am looking forward to going to Slovenia. That will, yes, that should be good. I have to get on the phone to my older predecessor, Johnny Fordham, to tell me all the Slovenia hotspots from his time when he went there. Should be fun.
Yeah, and isn't there usually a staff versus media game?
There is usually a staff versus media game. I scored 2 goals last time, skinning Anton Zingarevich on the way through before scoring one left-footed finish into the top corner, which I was particularly proud of.
Excellent. So not only has he nearly ruined a football club, but he's let you do him horribly on the football
pitch. He has let me do him. It was. If only it was caught on camera. It was quite a moment.
Maybe that's why he went into exile. Have you ever?
I think it probably
this?
Was. I think he was so embarrassed about it afterwards that he seemed disappear. I only saw him once after that, and even then he shiftily hurried past me in the corridors at the Madstad while he was. During that lovely game against Oman when he was desperately trying to flog the club to Oman.
Well, the shame. Oh, well, please don't do it to our Thai owners this summer. We really do need the cash with that Premier League money rapidly drying out. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us. What can we look forward to on getready.co.uk over the next week?
Well, hopefully we're going to have plenty of reaction to a great win at the weekend. And then I think it's going to be a lot of talk about season tickets next week. I believe Monday is going to be the day that we're going to hear some details about next season's season tickets, and I'm sure that's going to prompt an awful lot of debate and talking points, and so we'll be looking at that, exploring that, seeing how fans react to it, and I'm sure it'll be decent news. They're not going to suddenly hike the price up or anything like that.
I would very much think not after a lowest league attendance in 12 years.
You can't imagine that there's going to be any price hike, can you? It would not go down too well.
Absolutely not. Well, very much stay tuned to that. I said getreading.co.uk for that. And you can follow Charles on Twitter @Charles_Watts. We're at the Tarlhurst End and the Tarlhurstend.com. Loads of opinion pieces going up, unsurprisingly, when things are going badly. People are trying to figure out why. We've got arguments on both sides of the Vidra debate, whether he is the worst Reading player ever or whether he's not, whether he's somewhere in the middle. We've obviously got all of that fallout to the Tim Deller argument as well, plus lots of other good goodies up on the website, so check that out. And if you do fancy contributing, get in touch with us, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Hopefully we'll be back with the main edition of the show early next week as well. Haven't quite figured out a date yet, but stay tuned for that. And Charles, hopefully I'll speak to you next Friday before the final home game of the season.
Yes, hopefully so. And we'll have 3 points to talk about between now and then.
Yeah, and we can predict how many people will still be behind for the lap of honour.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be too many.
No. That'll be our tiebreaker for the Prediction League. Anyway, thanks very much, Charles, and have a cracking weekend. Have a safe trip down the M4 to Loftus Road.
Yeah, you too. Speak to you later, Dan.
Take care. Ta-da.
Bye-bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@TheTarlhurstEnd
and facebook.com/TheTarlhurstEnd.